Welcome to the PoliticalBetting.com Polling Matters podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley. Today we're going to be talking about the 2016 US presidential race. With Iowa and New Hampshire just around the corner, the race is hotting up. Hillary Clinton looks the inevitable Democratic nominee, but then she's been inevitable before, of course, whilst the GOP race is perhaps the strangest in years. Rubio is typically the bookmaker's favourite over here, but Donald Trump continues to lead in the polls in the states. Surely the controversial businessman cannot last, or can he? I was delighted this week to be able to discuss some of these issues on the podcast by former Democratic pollster and strategist Stan Greenberg. Stan is the CEO of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner and has advised presidents and other candidates such as President Bill Clinton, Al Gore, John Kerry and many, many others. He's also been instrumental in the Labour Party in the past couple of decades, advising people like Tony Blair, Gordon Brown and Ed Miliband. We discussed all number of issues to do with the 2016 US race, including whether Donald Trump will last, three candidates he thinks might emerge in the GOP race, and the eventual nominee, which may surprise some people. However, we started our conversation by discussing his recent book, America Ascendant, in which Stan Greenberg explains why he thinks the cultural and demographic changes that are taking place in the US are fundamentally altering the country, and in his opinion, for the better. This makes him optimistic about America's future, but also about the Democrats' prospects for 2016, and for the White House more generally in the future, if the Republicans do not react. Here is that conversation. So, Stan Greenberg, welcome to Polling Matters.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
So, your new book out, America Ascendant, you talk about a sort of revolution that's going on in the demographics in America. I'd be interested briefly in sort of talking a bit about the premise behind the book and why you wrote it and maybe some of the interesting things you found.
Actually, the premise is that it's not just demographics, that it is a huge social and cultural change. And actually, most important, it's a result of revolutions that are taking place in immigration, in racial diversity, in multiculturalism, in gender roles, breakdown of the family in male gender roles, decline of church, growth of secularism, the rise of millennials, and big shifts into the cities. And these happening at unbelievable rates and accelerating all the changes that we're talking about. So, yes, there's these demographic changes that are the outcome of underlying revolutions that are making America economically and culturally dynamic, but they're producing this new majority that's also producing a different, obviously, electoral situation for the parties.
And how do you see that playing out in 2016? It seems to me that you're quite bullish, I think it's fair to say, about the Democrats' prospects for the White House.
I'm bullish on their prospects for the White House, but I'm not bullish, you know, on whether they face up to the challenges that are leaving this majority alienated from politics and the economy. So this book is, like, optimistic about the country, but optimistic in the same way you would have been optimistic about America during the Industrial Revolution. Unbelievable technological changes, increases in productivity, macro, you know, wealth, but also great poverty, concentrations of populations in the cities, and an unbelievable housing muckraking scandals, corrupt politics, mass migration across from Europe to the U.S. But it required a long period of both parties being challenged to mitigate those problems. You need a period of reform for it to lead to America being successful as a country. And the same thing we're dealing with here. So that the elections are almost, I don't want to say they're unimportant. Because to me, we've already passed the tipping point. From my mind, there isn't any doubt about what the elections will look like, barring, you know, a scandal. I think the structural forces and the speed of these changes are so great that the Democrats will win. Republican Party, I believe, will be shattered by this election. I also think they'll be changed by this election. But then the question is, who's going to address these huge problems? You can't watch this ridiculous campaign spending, this corrupt democracy, this corrupt democracy in the United States. It's denying people the right to vote, and say, you know, here's our model for the world. It's all these extremes are the result of this counter-revolution by the Republicans to stop these new trends. They're going to fail, and that's why I think the election will be shattering.
I mean, one of the things you talk about in your book is this idea that Republicans almost seem to be running in the complete opposite direction in terms of the direction that America seems to be going in terms of they're running to the base of sort of older white people, maybe, or people that are religiously observant. I mean, what's your take on the current GOP race? It seems that all the commentators have been waiting for Donald Trump to fall away, and yet he seems to be quite resilient in terms of his poll numbers. Do you see him lasting?
You know, I think if you understand the way the Republican Party has sought to fight these trends, you would not be surprised that George Bush never rose as a candidate, and you will not be surprised that Trump will be
Jeb Bush.
And will not be surprised that Trump is a very strong competitor for the nomination, and I think will be one of two or three that go get past.
So what's behind
first set of
Trump's rise, you think?
Well, first let's go to the Republican Party. The Republican Party made a decision a decade ago. Karl Rove led that in the George Bush re-election effort. He made a very conscious decision to try to win the election, not by going after swing voters, but by energizing the base Republican voters, by bringing into the electorate the 5 million evangelicals who did not vote, he thought, in 2000, and therefore have a very intense religious culture war in order to draw these voters into the electorate. And so what we've watched over the last decade is this accelerating, deepening polarization of America in this culture war, led by the Republicans. That has also driven certain kinds of voters out of the Republican Party and attracted others in. As a result, the Republican Party is dominated first by the Tea Party, though the largest bloc is not the Tea Party, but the evangelicals and social conservatives who constitute half of the electorate. So you're going to see a Trump who represents that working class Tea Party, stand up for American jobs against immigration, and you're going to see a religious conservative, I think it'll be Cruz, emerge as a candidate who stands up for religious values, is hardline on abortion and gay marriage, and is not going to tolerate the kind of changes in the country. And that's the nature of that electorate, and that's why I think they will be sustained going into it.
So you think you see Trump and Cruz very much emerging, maybe Ben Carson falling away, as he's already kind of doing. What about Rubio? I mean, a lot of the bettors who will listen to this podcast and things, they see Rubio as a favorite. I mean, what do you see his chances as?
Yeah, there's about a quarter of the Republican base voters are moderates. But they're also the moderates in the context of the Republican culture war, people who are uncomfortable with the religious imposition in politics and who are pro-choice in their views. And so our moderate candidates, including Rubio, including Bush, have tried to sell themselves as just as conservative, in fact, even more conservative than anybody else on abortion. So, that means that you have these moderate voters that are kind of fragmented, really not going to any particular, candidate. So I don't quite see the base for Rubio, since he's come out with a very strong position on abortion against any exceptions for, rape and incest or life of the mother. And so, he's... I think he's caught betwixt and between. I think he'll emerge because there are some people who just want to win. They so fear an Obama or Clinton presidency that there will be people voting for him for that reason. But again, I'm not sure it's a big enough base to overcome where Trump and Cruz may be.
So if we have, it seems to me you're saying that maybe there's a race there with Trump, Cruz, and possibly Rubio as the kind of three candidates vying it out for the nomination. Is there anybody else you see that could potentially emerge? I mean, one of the things that is such a big field, isn't it, that as people drop out, the poll numbers will change quite a lot. But you very much see those three as the ones to watch.
Yeah, and they haven't actually been changing very much. I mean, if you look what's happening, you have Trump unbelievably stable. He's got the 25% Tea Party block, and he's been very stable in his vote. The religious vote is, distributing itself, but it's kind of Carson took the most of it. He's been slipping steadily. Cruz has been rising, steadily, and then Rubio is rising. And the question is, how far can Rubio go? I think the block, his voters available to him is not that great.
I mean, looking ahead to the general election, we assume Hillary Clinton will be the Democratic nominee. I mean, we'd like to get your thoughts on that in a moment. But what do you see the issues being? Because there is this old adage, isn't there, that when the economy and economic issues are the most important to voters, the Democrats win. Maybe when foreign policy and security are the most important, maybe the Republicans win. Certainly, that was the horse that Bush rode in the war on terror and so forth. We've seen, obviously, recently with the terror attacks in France and the immigration row, in particularly in the States, but in Europe too, that security does feel like it's going up the agenda. I mean, presumably that benefits the Republicans. I mean, how do you see that playing out? Or do you think other issues will fundamentally be the most important?
Well, look, the economy is going to be the fundamental, issue, and also the corruption of American politics. I mean, I know when one looks at this, there's great temptation to say, to use these kind of rules. Well, you don't. After 2 years of one party in power, it's going to be tremendous pressure to bring in a president of a different party. I think all those rules are out the books. I think we are, dealing with a unique period. That's kind of the end. We're in the last chapter of this Republican battle to stop this new majority from governing. It's reached a tipping point, and that's why their candidates are likely to be so extreme, that are so extreme coming out, in the primary. But even their nominee, I believe, will end up, being extreme, because they're the parties in the final stages of its battle to stop this new majority from governing. Everybody knows, though, day one after the election, that this is a new America. There will be major forces in the Republican Party recognizing that this is a changed country. They'll deal with immigration differently. They'll deal, with the sexual revolution. They'll finally accept the sexual revolution. I think there'll be a Republicans who accept the idea of national investment. There'll be, I think, a rollback of all this corruption of money and corporate influence. So I think there'll be a different Republican Party when the election's over. I don't think the rules apply. We're dealing with these revolutions, in energy and immigration and metropolitan areas, high tech, that are changing the country. Millennials are moving with unbelievable speed, like into the cities. Two-thirds of millennials with a college degree have already moved to the 50 largest cities. And so, everything, America's changing at an unbelievable pace. And I think the politics is going to change as well. It's created immense problems of both political corruption, income decline, family breakdown. And you have a very disgruntled country that's demanding the leaders address these problems. And Obama has really let them down on those issues. Even though I'm saying that, Hillary, I believe, will be elected president, I've been actually fairly critical of Obama not recognizing the big structural changes taking place in the country, not begin to address these in bold ways. And that's why these voters, this new American majority, are going to go in and out of the electorate, because they're pretty alienated with the political system.
And presumably that's quite a challenge for Hillary as she seeks to win the general, because, again, we're assuming, of course, she's a nominee, but it certainly looks that way at the moment. I mean, President Obama was very good at generating high turnout amongst Hispanics and black voters. I mean, presumably Hillary will want to try and replicate that. I mean, how do you see her campaign? I mean,
he was good in doing it in his election, but not in anybody else's. No, he's responsible for, if you look at the two off-year elections, I mean, the reason why Republicans hold so many offices is that Obama did not address these issues, these contradictions that come with our progress. And voters, he actually has bad ratings on the economy. Even though the U.S. economy does well in comparison to anybody else, his ratings are not great on the economy. And if you look at which party you trust on the economy right now, it's the Republicans more than the Democrats, because I believe he has not stepped up to address these issues. So I don't think the economy or foreign policy are necessarily Democratic or Republican issues. I think there's opportunity for the Republicans because Obama's been silent. But I don't think it's a real opportunity, because if you look at what Hillary Clinton is running on, look at what Bernie Sanders is running on, all the Democrats, they have a very bold economic agenda, very different than here in the UK. A real big offer that you can say, you know, America would look different if they did this. This is real, real stuff. If you look at what they're doing on reforming money and campaign reform, and what they're doing on Wall Street and corporate financialization, if you look at public investments in education, whole changes in work and family policies. They are, all the Democrats have very activist agendas, which has not been the case now for some time. And so that's why I think that they will do it. But on foreign policy, I think you're looking at very inexperienced candidates on the Republican side. And I think, you know, if you, and that's true, even if it's Rubio, I'm not sure that once Hillary's is on the stage, everything we've seen, once she has the stage, that she has, you know, when she's given her foreign policy speeches, conservatives have stepped back and said that, you know, we're pretty confident of her. And I think given her experience, I think she won't mind having a foreign policy stance.
It sounds to me like, I mean, Hillary can, because of her stature, I guess, in American politics, she can very much be her own candidate. I remember one of the debates when Al Gore ran for president was, does he run from Bill Clinton, President Clinton, or does he run with him almost? And I suppose it's a similar environment here where, you know, to what extent does Clinton run with Obama or sort of differentiate? But it sounds to me like she's sufficiently high profile or you know, has her own sort of agenda that's not necessarily a problem for her, do you think?
I think that's right. Al Gore was so conflicted personally, internally, about his relationship with Bill Clinton that you could not get through it. I came in and worked in that campaign from the end of July of the election, and a year before they had made the decision to break with the president, which I think was a mistake. But when it came to the last debate, when the strategy, the plan of the last debate was to defend the Clinton economy, which Bush was attacking, and we were going to defend the Clinton economy in the debate, and all our ads coming out of that to run the rest of the campaign in October were on the economy and talking about building on the strength of the Clinton economy. He wouldn't do it. In the actual debate, he would not do it. He was so blocked on saying positive things about Bill Clinton, he just couldn't get himself to do it. So he was so blocked. I think Hillary has clearly chosen her moments where to align with the president and like on healthcare, and need to promote it and take it even further, and where to be cautious, and that includes foreign policy, where she's also highlighted areas where she differed with the president. Mm.
I mean, one of the things that people are often very interested in is the running mates, and it's obviously very, very early to be looking at that. I mean, do you think there are any people you're looking at that you can see being a potential running mate for Hillary Clinton, or do you think it's just far too early to get into her mindset of who she would choose?
Far too early. No idea. I mean, sometimes, you think balance, if you were thinking, it's a dream ticket, Rubio, you have for the Republicans, you'd have Rubio from Florida, and he'd pick Kasich from from Ohio, who's fairly moderate, but trying to think about a Republican Party trying to unite coming out of the convention with all these Trump delegates and all these Cruz and religious conservative delegates, and so you have your top of your nominee having supported comprehensive immigration reform, and the VP having supported the Affordable Care Act, the two big Clinton initiatives. Mm. Obama initiatives. Yeah. You can't always, the Clinton went for to reinforce young, moderate Southern, and that's why Gore was, his nominee. Mm. Al Gore, it's like a Lieberman at a time when there was all these concerns about the moral values and what had happened in the Clinton White House, and clearly purposely chose Lieberman, who was an Orthodox Jew, to try to upset that. So it really, really depends on kind of the moment and what's possible.
And as we sit here in 2015, and obviously things will change a lot as we go through the primary and caucus and primary season, I mean, do you have a view on who you expect the GOP nominee to end up being?
It's hard for me to believe that they'd pick Cruz. It's just hard for me to believe. You know, I'm going to go with my Paul Ryan theory. Yeah, if you followed what the election of the Speaker, they actually had to beg Ryan because he was almost the only one who was had a genuine conservative agenda and was seen to be ideologically conservative, but also pragmatic enough to govern. I think I wouldn't rule out that since Ryan was on the presidential ticket with Romney, that if they can't get to a selection, that I wouldn't rule out that you end up with going to a Paul Ryan.
Wow, Mark, get your money on that, folks. That would be
I'm out there on the limb here. I'm way out there on the limb on Hillary and the Republican. How badly the Republicans will do in this election, and their VP choice and their presidential choice.
Let's talk. Wow, bombshell there. Let's talk a bit about the UK, because I know obviously you've done a lot of work with the Labour Party over in your career. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about. We talked a bit earlier about running. You know, being a primary season, running to the base and then having to sort of tax centre and that kind of thing. Obviously, the Labour Party has somewhat of an issue with that, with Jeremy Corbyn as its leader. Very popular amongst the grassroots, clearly, but his personal poll ratings not being particularly strong in the country. I mean, what's your general assessment of the Labour Party situation at the moment? Obviously, a very bad defeat, and I know that your firm has had polling out last week that showed that the public don't really understand Jeremy Corbyn's agenda.
Right. Well, I think it's transitional to something. It's not, you know, it's clearly not sustainable as a direction for the Labour Party, and I don't know how it'll play out. And the rules are complicated for the Labour Party, and it's also complicated because whatever the process of change, it has to be legitimate. It has to involve. Broad numbers of labor members in the process, and so look, I've been through parties that have gone through change. I was obviously worked for Blair very early, started in May of '95, so almost 2 years before he ran, but it was from the beginning he was. I looked at that process. They purposely, created issues in which they went outside, in effect, had referendum and brought in hundreds of thousands of new members as part of that process. I think Labour is going to have to go through another process of change, and I think people have to think about that, broadly. You clearly have Labour has to play an effective role against this government as opposition, but it also has to, hold Corbyn to account to a plausible strategy for the party being a governing party.
Stan Greenberg, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
So that was Stan Greenberg there. Big thanks to Stan for taking his time to participate in the podcast. Do check out his book, America Ascendant. It does sound like a very interesting analysis of some of the changes that are taking place in America. And certainly for anyone that's interested in politics in the US and maybe the direction of travel that country is embarking upon, that book will be very much worth reading. I thought some of his thoughts on the US race for 2016 were very, very interesting. Certainly bullish about Hillary Clinton's chances. And I think that's probably a view that I share as we get closer to the race. I was always of the mindset that Hillary was destined to be the sort of runner-up, and almost, well, I don't think a tragic figure is quite the right phrase, but almost ever so near but ever so far in terms of being the first female US president. But then as we get closer to the race, you see kind of the GOP potential nominees, and you look at most of them and think she can beat them. My personal opinion is that she might struggle against Marco Rubio, but if we do assume that Donald Trump or Ted Cruz was the nominee, I think that she would at least fancy her chances. You never know what's going to take place in terms of the events that lead up to a race next November. Obviously lots of things can happen between now and then, not least related to Benghazi and other things that Hillary Clinton is having to deal with. But she looks very much in the box seat at the moment. We've got a series of primaries to come in the new year, and obviously I think there'll be ebbs and flows of that race. I guess for now, let's keep an eye on whether Trump can last, whether Rubio really is justifiably the favourite in many people's minds. And then, I think on the rails, Ted Cruz. But, as people drop out, of course, in the GOP race, and there are lots of candidates, it's reasonable to expect that, some people might emerge that we haven't already anticipated or expected. So lots to come in the new year. And this is a topic we're going to keep coming back to, of course, because, you know, as I say, things will change. And as they do, we want to see what happens. So that was the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters podcast this week. The music you're about to hear is Pollinate by Kirk Pearson, licensed under a Creative Commons. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you hear, do give it a share. And maybe a sort of review on iTunes. If you subscribe to iTunes, of course, it does help us with our ratings and everything. And thanks for listening.